Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now let's take a look. Leaving and junior cert exams started this week, which can be a stressful time for teenagers and parents alike, as if you didn't know. Well, Leslie Wren is here, a music therapist, and she's here now to explain how we can all use music to help us relax and de-stress. So welcome to the programme, Leslie. Tell me how to do this. First of all, how do we choose, first of all, what music to de-stress us?
Well, so I'm not going to tell you that there's a specific song or type of music that's relaxing, because that's not true. Music is, as you probably know, is a very personal thing. So music that relaxes me is going to be different than music that relaxes you. And so the important thing is for everyone to kind of pick the music that speaks to them and pick the music that they find enjoyable to listen to. But you have to be really careful, because one of the biggest things is that music has really, really strong associations psychologically. So I was just thinking earlier, the latest season of Stranger Things actually has this in it in music therapy, that associations with a particular song bring back a lot of things emotionally, times of your life that were good, or things that really make you happy. They can also do the opposite. So if you have a song maybe that you've been listening to while you're studying for your Leaving Cert, you don't want to listen to that after you're, you know, after you're done, or if you're trying to unwind from it. So a lot of it is about choosing the music that's going to be the best fit for you personally, and it's going to be different for everyone.
Okay, but like right now, Sunday afternoon, 2:45, mm-hmm. some of the exams over, another week of exams on the way, there would be some people who would normally have been out this afternoon, and they're listening to this right now in the background. This is not something they should be listening. They shouldn't be listening to you.
No, they should not be listening to me speak at all. I think what they, you know, so make a playlist, you know, start simple, you know, make a playlist, put in it music that reminds you of something that's happy, that doesn't have these negative connotations. Something that if you were to close your eyes and put on a song, it would, you know, bring a smile to your face, or you could feel your body relaxing. I was at the dentist recently, and I was having a filling work done, and I was really super stressed, and I could feel my body tensing. And I put in my headphones, and I put on some music that was relaxing for me. And immediately, it all just, it stopped being so stressful. And it was a physiological reaction to the fact that I had something else to concentrate on, something else to do. There's actually a lot of research, which is really interesting, on the way that your nervous system, singing or humming, can actually impact your nervous system. So when you're singing or humming, there's a nerve that runs kind of all the way down from the back of your larynx. And when you're listening to something that you like and you're singing along and humming, it sends that message to your nervous system that all is well, all is good. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways, but usually the most important thing is to choose music that makes you feel good, that makes you happy.
So then, is there any music that we should not choose?
But music that you have negative associations with, or, you know, things that, you know, not break up songs, no.
So a playlist of positive association music.
Yeah,
is that what you're
saying? Okay. definitely.
So, you know, should we have different playlists to evoke different mental and physical responses?
Yeah. So if you think about, if you run, or if you've ever been a runner, I ran for a while and I had a playlist of music. And if you think about the way that the tempo of the music will affect your heart rate, will affect your breathing. So if you're putting together a playlist for running, you would put on maybe a warm-up song or two that are maybe a little bit building songs that kind of build in tempo, build in kind of texture. And then when you get to those later stages when you're really going, that's going to be where your fastest tracks are. And at that point in the run when you think, oh gosh, I can't do this, I still have to run another kilometer, then you put on the really, really uplifting music, and then you have cool down music. So that is going to impact your heartbeat. It's going to impact your breathing. And so you can make your playlists for different things. You know, everyone probably has one for when they're going out, you know, getting ready to go out. I know women tend to have that. You know, you're doing your hair, you're going to put on the music that's going to pump you up and get you ready for that fun evening. To the same way, you know, if you're running, you're going to have a different playlist than maybe if you're trying to relax before you go to bed. You might want to listen to something a little less that's going to lower your heart rate instead of raise it.
So in other words, like in the dopamine and serotonin world and all the rest of it, music is doing a million different things to our brains.
It is.
A million different kinds of music is doing a million different things to our brains.
And it's engaging in music. It's whether you're playing music live, listening to music live, listening to recorded music. Music actually accesses all different parts of the brain. So if you look at a brain scan when someone's listening to music, it lights up all over the place. So it's not just in one spot. There are lots of different stories of people who've had brain injuries and things. Like, I worked with a client who had a brain injury, and she could remember lyrics to songs. She could sing Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. She could sing that song with all the lyrics, which are not terribly, they're not simplistic lyrics. But if you asked her, you know, you pointed to a cup and you asked her what that was, and she was speaking, she might say pencil. So because of how music is kind of accessing the brain, it kind of jumps around in different ways so that it doesn't, if that one pathway is damaged, it's not going to, you know, impact your speech. So that's just kind of one way, you know, music is an amazing thing that can be used in so many different ways.
And what about playing an instrument? I mean, does that evoke the same physical and mental responses?
Definitely. Yeah. So there's a tactile thing to playing an instrument, whether it's, you know, whether it's a guitar or a hand drum or anything, you're going to be touching the instrument, feeling the instrument, that sensation of hitting the drum, or that sensation of the vibration of the guitar against your body as you strum. Yeah. All of those things, it impacts you. It's a physiological response as well as just, you know, what you hear orally. So you can work with, I work with children who have hearing loss, and you can put their hands or their feet up against an instrument and you strum the guitar, you strum the harp or whatever it is, and they will actually feel those vibrations, and that's a way to interact, or the feel of, you know, something in your hand, percussion instrument in your hand, that sort of thing. So,
what if you are doing exams and one of them is a music exam, you have a certain instrument, should you avoid that?
Avoid at all costs. Don't, right. You know, if you're, don't focus on that. And if you, you know, if it's voice, like I was a voice person, if it's voice and you don't want to avoid singing, just avoid the genre of music perhaps that you were doing your exams in. So try and get away from that.
Would you stress to saying, like a stretch I should say, to saying something like the music lowers blood pressure, reduces the risk of stroke, heart problems, it can solve your problems.
And it's not a stretch.
Relationship problems?
Well, every song in the earth seems to be about relationship problems. Yeah. So you can work through your emotions with that. No, actually, there's a lot of research. And that's one of the things, like music therapy as a field is based on evidence and based on research.
Just the creative arts therapies.
The creative arts therapies, in general. In general. So in Ireland, there's a group called IACAT, and all creative arts therapists are registered through this. And so you have to be credentialed. And that's if you're an art therapist, a music therapist, a drama therapist, or a dance movement therapist, or expressive arts therapist. So these are all therapies that work in different creative mediums. And we achieve, you know, these goals and outcomes for people through the use of creativity, which is just a really amazing.
Well, then what you're talking about there, like what you are as well, like this is evidence-based profession that you have, because you're a music therapist. So explain, first of all, like what is music therapy and how does it help people?
So you would work, a music therapist is someone who's, like I said, credentials. You're going to have a degree, a master's level degree. You're going to be accredited through IACAT. You're going to work with a client or a group of clients or patients, and you're going to work with them to improve or maintain their functioning and their well-being, and you're going to use music as that tool. So you're going to use music either by playing music live, making music, analyzing music, musical games, all kinds of different things you can do. And the goals are to increase and improve the kind of functioning and things, outcomes for them. But the goal is not going to be you're going to get up on stage and sing a song or perform something. It might be a goal, but generally the goals are going to be the outcomes are going to be non-musical outcomes that you want to see. So you know, you talked about blood pressure, you talked about those sorts of things with dementia. I work with a lot of children with Down syndrome, and we work on communication and speech through music. We work on emotional and social well-being through music, and you know, dexterity and physio kind of things, like motor skills through music playing, maybe grabbing a mallet and hitting a drum, that sort of thing. So there's lots of different ways you'd use it. We do songwriting, we do all kinds of things. And it's all based on trying to improve these different areas of life, but using music as that tool.
And it's not just in some kind of confined area, because I presume it's often used in conjunction with other healthcare professionals.
Right. Yeah. And so you would work with a physiotherapist or an occupational therapist or speech therapist, and you'd work with them on those goals. So we might work with the OT on, you know, perhaps a child has, you know, wants to learn how to use a zipper, and that requires, you know, pinching your fingers together in something called a pincer grasp. So you might have a guitar plectrum. You could have a plectrum and practice that strengthening of that with playing a guitar. So you'd work with whatever their goals are and the other therapies and use music to help improve them.
And your phrase is the Swiss Army knife.
Yes.
So we're talking about if you have an affliction or a condition or an illness, whatever it happens to be, there's so many things it can benefit by.
Exactly. Or
that can be,
Yeah. Music is very, you can use it in so many different ways. And so, and people can use it from, you know, we have patients who are, you know, babies in NICU all the way up to end of life care. So you don't have to be musical. You don't have to have, you know, musical quote unquote skill or talent. You don't have to be able to read music or play an instrument. We can work with anyone who enjoys music. The only thing is that you have to like music. If you don't like music, then music therapy is probably not going to work for you. But if you enjoy music in any way, we're going to, you know, be able to work with you to improve your life skills.
And are your sessions in groups or individuals? And I presume it's all about, as you say, it's everything from writing songs to making music.
Yeah. So it can be either or. It can be groups, it can be individuals. I've worked with groups of size of 20 or small groups of 3 or 4, and then individually one-on-one. So it's just whatever kind of works in the setting and works for the client, for the person.
And might you have one person and also family members there as well?
Yeah. So especially
like
if they
being the conduit.
Yeah. If you're looking at working with perhaps a patient in a hospital or hospice situation, a lot of times families are very much involved in that, or also with young children, or perhaps someone with a disability who may not be verbally communicating. So you work with the family, and it provides a lot of different things. You can provide kind of emotional and social engagement with their family. You can provide things like, especially in hospice, you know, it gives them some time to process emotions and experiences that they can share. But also for small children, when I've worked with babies and toddlers, and when you have, you know, the parents get involved, and then they can continue doing those sorts of things that you're doing at home during the week, you know, in between times that you see them. So it's a way to connect as well with the people aside from the person that you're treating.
And it's not just about listening to music.
No. You're making music. Drum circles, or, you know, playing ukuleles or instruments or hand percussion. I mean, there's a million different ways. And it's all based on what the person wants to get out of it, and we can adapt instruments so that they can play them. But it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a virtuoso, and you're going to experience the music in a lot of different ways.
Right. Okay. And there's writing songs is involved though.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. That's one of the things I love to do is songwriting. It's really great. And, you know, you can do that anywhere from just leaving out, you know, specific words in songs that they already know and having them fill in the blanks, to when I have a group of teenagers, we might talk a little bit about things that make them mad or things that make them happy. And then we incorporate them into a song that they choose, a song that they love. And then they have their own verses, you know, maybe with a chorus that they know. Yeah.
And you work with children and teenagers with Down syndrome. You've worked with older adults in residential and day centres, adults receiving cancer treatment, young adults in group living situations, children in primary schools. So the benefits that you have seen, what are the health benefits of somebody doing music therapy?
Well, obviously there's the specific physiological things. You know, you can see health benefits, like you can see reduced blood pressure. You can see improved muscle and functioning, you know, physiologically. The thing I think my big focus is on communication and cognitive with the children I worked with. I also work pretty heavily in kind of the emotional, social well-being area. So a lot of it is creating those connections, giving them opportunities to use language or nonverbal communication. So improving their ability to communicate what it is that they want, and to give them some ownership of things that are important to them.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, thanks so much for dropping into us on the programme this afternoon, Leslie. Leslie Wren, it is, music therapist. Where do you work individually? Or?
I actually work primarily with the Down Syndrome Centre, but then there's also it on IACAT's website, iacat.ie, you can find creative arts therapists all over the country and in all of the different fields.
So. Okay, well, listen, thanks so much for dropping in this afternoon.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.